Welcome to I've Never Seen Star Wars. I'm Marcus Brigstock, and this is the show in which I persuade my guests to try something they have never done before. Over the last series, I nearly convinced Michael Palin to be mean about somebody, Peter Mandelson to be nice about somebody, and David Cameron to be somebody. Couldn't quite pull it off. Now, let's welcome tonight's initiate. He is a comedian, a writer, broadcaster, and professional Leonard Cohen impersonator. Ladies and gentlemen, Arthur Smith! Good evening, Arthur. Welcome. How are you?
I'm pretty good. My apologies to anyone in the audience who misread the ticket and is expecting to see Aerosmith.
Now, you've done a huge number of extraordinary things, so it was quite hard to find things to get you to do. You've sung the Moldovan national anthem naked on Balham High Street.
Yes, I have.
That's the weirdest coincidence, because that's what I was going to get you to do.
I do it every Tuesday.
OK, you've also appeared in Panto in Denmark.
Yes. Hasn't everyone? It happens every year. There's an English language pantomime in Copenhagen, and I gave my Nurse Nelly nightcap. Right. And the audience, a lot of them are English professors and students of English who look upon this weird English arcane theatrical form of panto. And, you know, when if you say, oh, no, you don't, there's a sort of rustling while they look at their notes. And they go, oh, yes, you do. Yeah, to them, it's like kabuki theatre.
Good, OK, and you've never driven a car?
No, I have never. Well, I've only ever driven one motorised vehicle, and that was for a bit of filming, and I was meant to be a milkman. And I discovered I could either do the lines or drive the milk flow, but not both. And after I'd buggered up the lines the first two times, I thought, I'm going to get them right, and I got the lines right. Wrote off the milk flow. I can't drive.
Well, this is what led me on to the first challenge that I had for you, because based on that, you haven't watched a show that's been seen by 350 million people in 90 different countries, and that show is Top Gear. I asked you to watch an episode of Top Gear.
Yes.
What were your initial impressions?
Well, I mean, the last 10 minutes of the programme was possibly the finest bit of television there's ever been. Possibly. I wouldn't know. I didn't watch it. Right. I could only manage the first bit, really. I'm really not familiar. I know nothing about cars. You know, if you say to me it's a blue Lexus, I don't know what a Lexus is. They're all Cortinas to me. I made some notes.
Right.
About this program called Top Gear. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened is a tall old man in tight blue jeans with an oblong face and hand-drawn hair came on at the beginning and tried to make some jokes about Germans and homosexuals. And then some other men, I think, feeling sorry for him, laughed. The length of his face meant that he was able to register an almost infinite amount of smugness. And then one man got in a car and started being very boring about it, and then another man who was a bit shorter did the same thing in a different car. They both tried to make jokes too, which was sweet of them, but they had no aptitude for it. And then the first man, the tall man, actually presented an advert for a car and talked about prostitutes. And then I turned off.
That was actually the original pitch for the programme. And that's the basis upon which it was commissioned. Did you like anything about it?
No, nothing. Really, no. I'm trying to think of one. One of the people in the audience had a shirt that I quite liked.
So some redeeming features there.
Yeah.
Let's have a bit of a listen to the episode of Top Gear.
Tonight, James drives a Rolls-Royce. Richard drives a Bugatti Veyron. And I drive something that isn't either of those things.
And the audience goes berserk. But what about that delivery? I mean, Clarkson's got a very emphatic, you know, it's sort of, it draws you in.
What I'd like to see would be Jeremy Clarkson try and do 10 minutes down the Comedy Store, because he'd fail on his arse and be heckled off.
Yes.
By me. But I'm sorry, his delivery really annoys me. There's a sort of smug, here I am, what a funny chap I am in my jeans and my Sunday Times column, which I fill with rubbish I can't even think every week. My stupid books railing against anything that I don't like. He's a really irritating man, really cars, clearly. Blokes who are really into their cars are inadequate.
Yeah. Let's just find out, how many Top Gear fans are there here tonight? Give us a cheer if you enjoy Top Gear. It is a phenomenally popular programme. Yeah. It's adored. I mean, 350 million people around the world have watched it in 90 countries or something like that. I mean, it's sort of torture for me because I admire the programme. It is incredibly well produced. They do some phenomenal sequences. It looks amazing. And the sort of banter and stuff, if you analyse it in the cold light of day, doesn't work. But I'm swept along with it. I have to press a fork into the back of my hand to stop myself from crying out while I'm watching it. It's the only way to get through it. But the production's astonishing, isn't it?
Well, I suppose so. If you like lots of pictures of cars driving by, which you obviously do, Marcus. Yeah. But on the other hand, adverts, car adverts. I always, you see it, and it's a beautiful cliff, and you think, oh, that looks nice, and then some stupid car drives through it.
Do you know, it was the most popular factual programme on the National TV Awards, and it beat Planet Earth. I mean, literally, the Top Gear has beaten Planet Earth in real life and the TV Awards.
Well, I mean, but I don't think, popularity is necessarily a mark of quality. And I refer you to the career of Judith Chalmers. Only because I just couldn't think how to end that sentence.
No,
I usually find if you say Judith Chalmers, you get away with it.
People often say Top Gear is the funniest programme on TV. But let's have a listen to some of that vintage humour.
The thing is, I believe deep in my heart that I look good in it and it suits me because it's stylish and it's contemporary.
Every time I see you, those are the words that pop into my head, stylish and contemporary.
Thank you.
After other words like, for instance, beige, Stana Stairlift, the war. Do you think any more? Homosexual.
I object to the beige.
Isn't it funny, like homosexuals,
brilliant.
Eh? Yeah, I mean, it's all about penises, really, isn't it?
Well, there's certainly three of them on it, I've seen.
But that was one of the moments in it I noticed that Jeremy Clarkson had found a car that went from 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds described it as a profound experience.
Yeah.
And I think, well, Jeremy, really, there's another world out there. There is love, there is death, there is life. I mean, going quickly in a tin box.
So I'm guessing from what you've said, you're not going to be massively inclined to watch Top Gear again?
I would rather bash my own teeth out with a hammer.
What would you give it out of 10?
There was some nice colours flashing by and the little bits of library music that were quite entertaining that distracted you from the great ugly bastard at the front. I'll give it 2.5 out of 10.
Two and a half?
In 20 seconds.
There we go. 2.5 out of 10 for Top Gear. Okay, let's talk about something altogether more inspiring, music. Now, you love music. You're pretty passionate.
Well, yes. I have an eclectic range of music at home, and I listen to music. But I could never play anything, unfortunately, other than like the comb and the kazoo.
Right, so you couldn't... You've never actually managed to play a tune on an instrument?
No. I put this down to the fact I changed schools just at the time when I got to the new school. I hadn't had any music lessons. Mm. The new primary school, they were all learning the recorder, and they'd been doing it for a couple of months. So I was the biggest idiot in the class, unable to manipulate my recorder, and I just used to bang girls on the head with it. And that was really the end of my music career.
Fair enough. Well, my challenge to you, the thing I've asked you to do, is to learn the piano, and I'm going to ask the audience now to welcome an extremely talented woman. Would you please put your hands together for Elena Vorotko? This is Arthur Smith.
Hello.
Hello, Eleanor. I can tell you, Eleanor is a postgraduate research student at London's Royal Academy of Music, and she is going to give you a piano lesson.
Eleanor looks terrified.
Yes.
So, let me just check. Eleanor, I have been told I have rather nice hands, and they might be good piano hands.
I think you do, but you might want to cut your nails before we start.
Dear, it's a bad start.
OK, now I'm going to step back a bit. Eleanor, let's see what Arthur can do.
Yes. Well, Arthur, you're actually sitting very well at the piano. You're sitting in the middle of the chair, your feet are firmly on the ground, and you have a straight back. Well done.
I'm sorry I didn't cut my nails, miss.
Yeah, I forgot my ruler, unfortunately.
Don't get her one, Marcus.
All right, so let's start. This note we call middle C.
Ah, yes, we'll I've heard of middle that. C.
Oh, yes, good. Now...
Hang on, which one was he?
Now, we're going to learn a little song.
Oh, good.
Cuckoo. We're going to take E and C, and we're going to play it all over the keyboard. See how many cuckoos you can find. Cuckoo.
Right, I'll just start with the same cuckoo to just get off the mark.
Cuckoo. It's rather angry cuckoo.
I'm going up again now.
Oh, there is one more down. Oh,
what
that's
about
an Australian
right down
cuckoo.
This end?
You know Australian cuckoo is cuckoo the other way around.
Ah, the Australian cuckoo.
Cuckoo. Now, have you heard of a song, Three Blind Mice?
Never. Yes, no, quickly I have. Is that the international song of
Well, it
idiots?
Isn't, actually. I just recently found out what how horrific words it has. Now, so we're starting with already familiar E. And we go, Three Blind Mice.
Oh,
three
Oh, yeah.
Let's try that.
Three Blind Mice. Which finger shall I use?
We should just use the middle one.
Yeah.
Now, let's try to play it together.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. You do your bit, I do my bit. That's it.
That's pretty good. That presumably is the sort of thing that you'd be doing at the Royal Academy of Music. That sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
very
exactly
similar. Now, you've taught people piano. I mean, does Arthur strike you as the kind of guy who has an aptitude? Is that how this works?
Well, yes.
No, she makes.
A big thank you, please, ladies and gentlemen, for Eleanor Vorodka. Now, Arthur, obviously, that was just the tiniest wee taster of learning an instrument. But, you know, the truth is, you picked up that tune, you were able to play it. You know.
I was quite excited, actually, genuinely. It's been editing down originally from 7 hours.
Yes, yes.
Listening. No, but I mean, very quickly, I got a couple of notes. I mean, it sounded like a tune a bit, didn't it? And I felt that just a couple more lessons and I'll have my first album out.
You'd be right. That's a mistake so many people have made. So, as an experience, learning the piano for the very first time?
9 out of 10.
9 out of 10, there we go. Now, Arthur, are you romantic?
Yes, I am actually romantic, really. I've done a few romantic things about time. A woman I used to go out with once, I took her away for a mystery weekend, and she, as a teenager, she'd always loved the Bay City Rollers. Mm. And I contrived to get the singer from the Bay City Rollers to come round for a cup of tea.
Wow.
And poor girl was completely shocked and ran out the back. And I was left with Les McEwen for 7 hours.
Okay, well, given that you are a romantic, I was surprised to discover that you had never read a Mills and Boone.
No. I mean, I like Jane Austen. I thought she was a wonderful writer. And in a sense, I think I've always imagined she's the template.
Mm. Well, I asked you to read quite a modern Mills and Boone.
Yes.
A lovely book called Between the CEO's Sheets.
Yeah, I thought it was some tale of laundry love at first.
I should give you the synopsis of this. Obviously, the synopsis of every Mills and Boone book is a man and a woman look like they won't, but then they do. but in this particular one, it's Gina had a fling with Wade Beaumont 9 years ago in El Paso. After a misunderstanding, she left suddenly and has not seen him since. She accidentally goes to work for him on an island where he teaches her not to be afraid of the water despite losing both of her parents in a horrific water skiing accident.
Oh, that's nice.
She tries to resist his advances but fails. They have a steamy affair, fall out again, and then get married.
Yeah, that's lovely. Right. Obviously. But I was slightly shocked, actually. There's quite a lot of sex in it, actually, along the way. I mean, listen to this bit. Wade grabbed her from behind, his hands holding her gently just under her breasts, the zipper of his jeans grinding into her derriere. And then Wade wove his hand in her hair and brought his lips to her throat, his voice a gruff whisper. Why do you feel you are right for this job, Miss Grady? No, but it is a bit like that, you know. This is... They're meant to be working together. They spend their whole time sort of nearly having sex.
My favourite passage was in the first chapter. And it says, he felt her presence, breathed in the heady scent of her exotic perfume. His better judgment told him to let her go. He'd be better off not complicating his life by choosing to work alongside the only woman he knew who could turn him on with just one look. He'd had to sit down to conceal an unwelcome yet healthy erection that pulsed from underneath the desk. The thing that really captured
the
spirit of it is the health of it.
Yeah.
A healthy one.
Yeah. You see, I suppose an unhealthy one would sit at home smoking.
There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot in the book about what people are wearing. I like this. It says, Wade dressed in a pair of Wranglers, faded not by the manufacturer, but by hard work and long wear. A plaid shirt and his Stetson. He put on his boots and left his yacht, Total Command, to pick up Gina. He has a yacht called Total Command.
Yeah, well, what's your one called, then?
Yeah. Polite request. I'm English.
I like this bit. She lay back against the lush cool sheets, savouring his thorough assault. I mean, yeah. You know, this bloke... Shouldn't be here. He should actually be in a prison cell. Gina nodded, swallowing the lump in her throat. There's a trick if you can do it.
It is slightly euphemistic. Let's just, you know, so that the audience doesn't think that we've only picked out particularly bad instances of writing. There are 170 something pages. Why doesn't someone on the front row there shout out a number between 178, and we'll just see what's on that page. You, sir?
74.
Arthur, why don't you have a look at page 74?
Oh, that's right. Make me start.
Yeah. Someone else nominate a paragraph number between 1 and 5. You, madam?
3.
Paragraph 3 on page 74.
Paragraph 3. Yeah. Nothing stays untouched, Gina. He cast her a narrow-eyed look from under the brim of his Stetson. Sounds like George Bush.
Let's go to the third row. Give us a page number. Anyone? Shout one out.
117.
OK, and someone give us a paragraph number. This is fun. I could play this indefinitely. Paragraph 4. Gina's face flamed. Her eyes turned black as coal. She took a step towards him, fixing her glare on him. Are you saying that because you thought I screwed you over, you decided to do the same to me?
And Wade adds, I guess the screwing went both ways last night.
It's clever stuff. How do they come up with it? So, as an experience, slipping between the CEO's sheets...
I give the CEO a 7.
7 out of 10 for Mills and Boone. OK, so, Arthur, this next thing I'm going to ask you about is a little bit odd. You've never had children.
No. Well, it's not that odd.
Well, no, but what I'm going to ask you to do is faintly odd.
It's my solicitor in.
No, because you've never had children, it struck me you won't have had a chance to taste some of the delicious things that the kids eat. And when I talked to you about this, I realised you had never had a Pop-Tart.
No, I'm not even entirely sure what they look like.
Come over here with me. We've got a toaster at the back here. And,
are you going to make me a Pop-Tart?
I am going to make you a Pop-Tart.
This is like some really ropey play. Oh, my God, it looks like a kind of painting by Jean Miro.
So, let's pop that in the toaster.
Well, let's have two. Do you not want one?
Not at all,
no. I'll make one. I'll give one to a member of the audience. I bet who fancies a Pop-Tart?
The students, there they are, identifying themselves, who haven't eaten in like some time.
Yeah, after they've had a pot noodle, a Pop-Tart. It's Saturday night out.
So there we are. Those are... That's a filthy smell, isn't it? You getting that?
Yeah, what is it? Is there something wrong with the toaster?
Yes, there are Pop-Tarts in it.
Is it going to be like the temperature of the centre of the sun?
Well, they've come up. That's fractionally too hot to hold.
Oh, that's right. Give it to me.
There you go. There you go. Your first ever bite of a Pop-Tart. How is it?
It's delicious. What, I've been missing these all my life. They hadn't invented them when I was born, I don't think. I mean, when was the Pop-Tart invented? You've got a clipboard.
I have got a clipboard. It was actually invented in 1963.
And you originally, made that up.
No, I'm serious. Really? 1963, and originally called Country Squares. And then Kellogg's nicked the idea. Yeah, I'll break that in half. You've never had one, sir. Have you had one?
No.
No one's ever had a Pop-Tart.
That's why they're lunging at them. Are you studenty people enjoying that?
No.
No? No. Even the students have turned their nose up. I was telling you, in 2001, the US military dropped 2.4 million Pop-Tarts on Afghanistan. Seriously, these are presumably weapons-grade Pop-Tarts. There are unexploded Pop-Tarts all over Afghanistan. I think you're going to finish that. Do you want me to put another round on?
Let's have a party.
I'll put another round on. Just talk us through exactly how it tastes. Is it like anything else you've eaten?
Well, I feel like Marcel Proust. In volume one of À la recherche du temps perdu, where he bites into a madeleine and is cast back to his childhood.
Yeah.
I've been cast back to an imaginary childhood.
That you never had, a childhood devoid of Pop-Tarts.
No, but this childhood has got the Pop-Tart in it. I now see my life has been almost meaningless. I love this Pop-Tart. Oh, it's gorgeous!
Thank goodness for Proust and Kellogg's. Okay, well, that seemed to be fantastic. How would you rate your Pop-Tart experience?
12 out of 10.
12 out of 10 for the Pop-Tart. Have a listen to this. Now, that is an extract from Broadway and the West End's longest-running musical and, indeed, the nation's favourite show, the classic, the epic, the almost pant-wettingly fabulous Les Miserables. You had never seen it.
No.
Sent you some tickets. What did you think?
Well, I must admit, the first half, I was reminded of a sentence that was someone said about the Parsifal by Wagner. Mm. Parsifal starts at 6 and ends at 11. After 3 hours, you look at your watch and see that it's 6:15. And I found the first half a bit hard going. They were singing everything.
Yes.
It's one of those sung-through ones, which I don't mind in opera, which I occasionally go and see, but there's something faintly... off-putting about if I suddenly said, this is what I thought about it, Marcus. What about you? What about you?
I would say that, Arthur, you've asked me a question.
Well, yeah. Give me an answer, man, now. You know, it's slightly silly.
But it's...
I always find when I see a big West End musical, I think I'm kind of counting the actors, thinking, how much did this bloody cost, you know? And then I end up as well finding that I prefer the set to anything else.
It is amazing. I mean, that's a huge part of the production, particularly of Les yeah. Mis, you know, is that stuff seems to appear out of nowhere, and they build the barricades on the stage, and they yeah. turn around so you see... both, you know, where the government are fighting and the, yeah. and the peasants and all the rest of it.
I had some difficulty following the plot a bit, though. But that's partly because I'm not very good at plots and partly because I find that all actors under the age of 35, all male actors, look the same to me.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really tell who was who for quite a while.
Especially when they're all singing.
Yeah.
It does make it tricky.
Yeah, and especially, you know, if I've dozed off a bit. Yeah.
That can make it more problematic. Yeah,
and I mean, and I don't know, for some reason, I got a bit annoyed when I started making phone calls in the first time.
Yeah. Let's have another blast.
Will you give all you can give so that our banner may advance? Some will fall and some will live. Will you stand up and take your chance? The blood of the martyrs will water the meadows of France.
Do you hear the people say?
Stop.
He stood out on his chair, he's waving his fist.
You have to stop there, I'm filling up. I've went...
It was quite stirring, though, you're right. I mean, that's a very stirring little piece, isn't it?
The blood of the martyrs will water the meadows of France.
That's what I call a good night out.
So, as someone who not only had never seen Les Mis, but was pretty resistant to musical theatre... What would you give that?
I enjoyed it, and I thought the actors were terrific, and the orchestra was good, but I really loved the set above all. I'm going to give the set 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10 for the set of Les Mis. Well, there we are. That's all of the things. I want to say...
Well, I enjoyed most of them, yeah.
It's been great fun. Out of all of the things that you've tried, which was your favourite?
I'm going for the Pop-Tart.
Arthur Smith, thank you very much for being my initiate on I've Never Seen Star Wars. Arthur Smith, ladies and gentlemen.